This is Business of Home. I'm your host, Dennis Scully. Every week, I'll be talking with leaders and innovators from all corners of the home industry. My guest this week is interior designer Orlando Soria. 2 years ago, Orlando was riding high with a hit book, buzzy brand partnerships, and a new show on HGTV. In 2020, it all came crashing down in a series of unfortunate events that he's been chronicling online. I wanted to speak to Orlando to get a rare inside look at how design TV really works, and to explore the perilous nature of the influencer economy. We talked about the long hours, tough working conditions, and low pay that go into making an HGTV show, the pressure to be positive on social media, and why being an influencer is a lot less glamorous than it might seem. This podcast is brought to you by Juniper Market. Juniper Market is a new trade-only online marketplace for home design and gifts, easily letting designers and retailers discover, connect, and order from brands anytime, anywhere. It comes to the industry from the organizers of Atlanta, High Point, and Las Vegas markets, which means that many of the brands you shop at market are now accessible from one single online experience. Launching this month, Juniper Market already has millions of SKUs and hundreds of brands, with more added daily. With filters that make it easy to shop by aesthetic, availability, and price point. Create an account at junipermarket.com. So I reached out to you the other day, coming off of a post that I had seen you share on social media about some of the challenges and struggles that you've been having during COVID. And since we spoke over the weekend, you've subsequently penned a very sort of moving and heartfelt piece on your blog that I would encourage listeners to go and read, because it really spells out a lot of the realities around some of the things that many of the people who listen to this show might be trying to pursue themselves. Mm-hmm. You landed an HGTV show. You've been a very active social influencer, and you've had some, as you describe, some disappointments, some setbacks. Mm-hmm. I believe you called it a COVID comedy of errors.
Yes, and I take a lot of responsibility for a lot of it. Just full disclosure.
Well, so I mean, let's share with listeners some of what has happened for you. It's funny, I was thinking back to when you and I were doing a panel together in Atlanta, and this now seems ages ago. Mm-hmm. But I think you had just learned about getting your HGTV show, and you were very excited. It was an idea that you had presented and a concept that you had produced. Mm-hmm. Tell me when you got the exciting news and what you were imagining at the time.
In 2017, I went through a breakup. The only thing that got me through that challenging time was that I moved into a new place, and I just kind of thrust myself into decorating it, into designing it. And that process was so incredibly healing for me that I was like, how can I turn this into something that can help other people? So I used that as sort of material to create what is called like a sizzle reel, which is basically just like a little mini commercial for the show. And I think the original title was Design in the Dumps. And I can't fully remember how we came up with the title Unspouse My House. I think it was somebody at HGTV, actually. So the first season of my show was called Unspouse My House. And the premise of the show was that every week I would help somebody recently going through a breakup to kind of transform their life by reimagining a space or multiple spaces in their home. And the first season we filmed 6 episodes, and I was really proud of those. And then we got more episodes the subsequent year, and they kind of rebranded the show as a show called Build Me Up, which was more of an all-encompassing kind of life changes type theme. And so we started filming that in September 2019, and we were originally, I think, supposed to film for 4 or 5 months, but just with those shows always go over. So it ended up taking us about 10 months to shoot the show. And, you know, obviously during that time, COVID came about. So I emerged from shooting that show into an economy that was stopped.
As you outline in your post that you did, you're filming for months, and then COVID comes, and you tell me that the timeline of when they tell you that the show's basically being moved to a midnight time slot, which essentially in your mind means the show's sort of being canceled and they're not moving forward with it.
The show premiered, I think, in July. And it aired for 3 weeks, and then I got the call that they were moving it to midnight, which was essentially canceling it. You know, and I'm not going to lie, that was like hugely disappointing, obviously, because a crew and I worked, you know, incredibly hard, really long hours. I'm talking 6 days a week, maybe, you know, I would get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and, you know, drive 2 or 3 hours each way to set, which because of just the budgets and because people in LA do not care about being on TV. We were usually like in Ventura County or Orange County. And with the LA traffic, like even in the pandemic, that's far. It represented a lot of physical, hard labor, long hours. And, you know, this is something that I have a lot of gratitude for the crew about. And there's so many people behind the scenes that really killed themselves to help me make that show. And I will always be thankful for that. But really, when you do an HGTV show, you're doing it for the marketing value. So the fact that it only gave me 3 weeks of marketing versus the 14 that I was supposed to get meant that I kind of felt like I wasn't really compensated for my time and my work.
Well, and I want to ask you specifically about what you just described, that notion of, it almost seems as if there's an implicit understanding that you're going to do an HGTV show. Perhaps you're not actually going to get paid very much for doing the actual show, but there is this promise of future potential revenue that having been seen on HGTV will make possible for you. Is that how you understood it going in? Because as you've pointed out, in part because the show was also canceled, but the actual money that you made from doing a show was very little, as it turned out.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly why they know that they can get people to do this. And in talking about this, I don't want to come across as if I'm complaining or that I'm not thankful. I will always, always, always be thankful for HGTV and the opportunities that they gave me. And, you know, there are wonderful producers there that I've known and loved for over 11 years. I got my start being on an HGTV show, Emily Henderson's TV show. And from that experience, I understood this is not a consistency thing. This is not a money-making thing. So I knew that at any moment, the show could be taken away or canceled or whatever. Like that was something that I knew from the get-go. And I think just processing it over the last few years and kind of coming out of the darkness that I was in, I've realized like, oh yes, I've made a lot of mistakes and there are a lot of things that I could have done differently. And I spent 2 full years feeling shame and embarrassment. And then I sort of came to another conclusion where I was like, I was in a very exploitative situation. They knew that they could get me to do a job. So basically, just for listeners, I made $40,000 because HGTV pays per episode. And actually, the talent fee for the people on HGTV shows comes directly from the HGT network. So it's dictated by them. So once you've taken out the agent fees and taxes and stuff, my take home was $17,500 for 10 months of work and amortized over time because we went so far over, that ended up being less than $11 an hour. The threshold for a living wage is about $750 in LA. I was making $437 a week. So my anger, and I do have a lot of anger, is not really anger for myself. It's anger at what is going on in this country with people at the high end, CEOs, the 1% making a ton of money off of the labor of people like me. And I can't even believe that I'm saying that as somebody with a television show, but I'm also talking about the need to have respect for everybody that is doing the work that makes this money possible. So that's where the anger comes from. And I will tell you, I'm not going to be sharing anybody's name unless they explicitly give their consent, but a ton of talent from HGTV has reached out to me with very similar experiences.
From the perspective of the pay that they received or the treatment that they received, what did they relate to in what you described?
It is pay, but it's also working conditions. One example is, like, on one episode, I painted a mural in a garage, and this is something that was done with me and one other person at the house because it was the night before the reveal. I finished at 3 a.m. I got home at 4. And then I basically just had to turn around and, like, take a shower and drive back because it was so far away. So that's not safe. And I think, you know, I was working in a really unsustainable work environment. So I do have a problem with just the notion that if you can get somebody to do something for a very low rate as a wealthy company, that's okay to do.
And that's exactly what I want to get back to, this notion that it sounds like you feel that HGTV understands that somebody like you is perhaps going to be willing to take less money sort of up front because there is this promise of future revenues for you with commercial deals or other sort of social sponsor deals. And there's a long list of talent waiting, thinking that this is a dream worth pursuing, that this, right? So many designers, so many people that we talk to every day, they hold this up as a life goal. Oh my gosh, I want to be on HGTV and I want to get this show of my own. And I think what's been so interesting about the specifics that you've outlined is really helping people understand what the reality of that might look like. Not just from the financial side, but you've also pointed out the hours that you worked on the show. There was no way that you could have been doing interior design projects at the same time, for example. There just weren't the hours in the day, correct?
Yeah, because it was long shooting days. It's the kind of situation where you can't just, like, have a design firm and do a show like that at my level. I think that they have more famous talent that probably have, you know, the ability to just show up to set and film scenes and not really do much else. But that, you know, for the people that I know who have done HGTV shows, especially in their first few seasons, it is an all-encompassing thing that does not allow you to do anything else.
So it's really a choice that you have to make.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to do this HGTV show to the exclusion of everything else that I might have had going on.
Yeah. And I think in normal times, you know, had the influencer economy not really, like, stopped like it did right as I was getting out of doing the show, I think it's kind of like, it's kind of the perfect storm with me because of when everything happened. What that's done for me, because it has screwed me over so royally, is it has taken away my fear of talking about this stuff, because this is something that other hosts cannot talk about. They don't want to burn bridges. They want to keep opportunities open. Everybody's trying to survive. So there is a strong feeling that you cannot speak out about what actually happens. You also don't want to seem ungrateful or that you don't appreciate the opportunity. It's a challenging thing, but, you know, it was very obnoxious to me because, like, during COVID, I was very, like, at least the first part, very publicly supportive of things that would keep us all safe. And I had a lot of people being like, oh, you're just like a Hollywood liberal elite that, like, you know, doesn't understand what's really going on in the economy. Meanwhile, I was, you know, penniless and all of my sponsorships had dried up and the sponsorships were my payment for the show. Like, that was how I was being compensated.
Right.
So I think the reason that I'm trying to demystify this reality show stuff a little bit is to just let people know this is what's going into what you're watching. And also, this is highly related to the way that the rest of the economy in our country is heading in a direction that is really dangerous for everyday people. You know, just feeling like I was part of that kind of environment that did feel so exploitative opened my eyes to, like, all right, a lot of stuff happened over the last 2 years, and I'm going to take responsibility for the mistakes that I've made. But I also was put into a position that I think is untenable for most people.
Often one of the criticisms in the design community, especially about the HGTV-like programming, is that it creates this illusion that projects like the ones you worked on to transform people's homes could be done in such a relatively short period of time for such a small budget. Mm-hmm. And so often, right, to those that know better, it seems unrealistic. And to carry that even further, it seems misleading. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much that culture of sort of putting forward this work that makes it appear as if you can do this for so little in such a short period of time fits in a way with how little they seem to be willing to pay you the talent to execute it.
I do. There is a lot of interesting stuff that I think would be helpful for people to know. And I think as a designer, it can be very frustrating to watch those shows and have people be like, I did my bathroom for $5,000. And you're looking at it going like, that's a $30,000 renovation.
Exactly.
And I want to explain to people the reason why that happens. The reason that that happens is that HGTV has control over the guests that are on your show. And they also like to oversee the budgets, and they like relatable budgets. So for example, in the casting process, if you have a client that has a $250,000 budget, you know, HGTV wants a big splashy makeover. The production company might lie to HGTV and say, this was a $100,000 makeover. So it creates the situation where we're presenting things that are a complete fabrication. But as the designer, you want to have a visually interesting, you know, I want the show to be pretty. I want the show to be good looking. And right. It's not always, right. You know, if we had more time, maybe I could DIY everything. But, you know, that's just not really a possibility on a show like that. So it ends up creating the situation that creates these unrealistic perceptions of how much stuff costs. And it is frustrating to be behind the scenes of that, because we also had a lot of clients that, like, you know, maybe the production company would want to bring on, and HGTV would be like, well, their budget isn't relatable. It's too much money. So if you're at home and you're watching going like, why are they pretending like this is so cheap? It is because of network control, and it is because they want middle America to feel that these things are attainable. And I think there's a lot of things that are happening in the design world that have to do with the sort of democratization of design information. And I'm of a lot of minds about it. I want people to be included in design and having beautiful homes. And I want that to be not something that is class stratified, but at the same time, we're creating this expectation that everybody can have these, you know, unrealistically affordable home renovations. And it's because of wanting things to be accessible and appealing to viewers. And I understand that, but I also, you know, having been inside of it, don't feel fully great about having been on a show that had to misrepresent budgets.
Well, and you also pointed out in some of what you wrote that often you were even working with, I guess, some of the guests on the show who weren't fully on board with the whole process.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Help me understand that.
So that, I mean, what happened with my show is that, as I mentioned before, the first season was called Unspouse My House. The second season, we rebranded it as Build Me Up. But we didn't find that out until, I think, December 2019. So we had already been shooting since September, October. Well, planning and shooting. We didn't start shooting until October, but we were working on it, you know, September. So the way that these shows are cast is you get like a casting budget. The casting is done by an outside agency. HGTV oversees all of the people that they're casting, because I think they want to make sure that there's a variety that they want over their different shows. Basically, they changed the concept of the show in the middle of the season. We didn't have any more casting budget, but we did have to nix certain people because they wanted it to be not only breakup stories, but other stories of transition. So that meant going back into the files of people who had already applied to be on the show, which were already limited. You know, by that time, there had been so many that had been nixed by HGTV that this was an extremely small pool of applicants. And because we were trying to find non-breakup stories in a casting net of people that had been cast based on having had breakups, it was an even smaller pool. So what ended up happening is that our producers had to really like browbeat and harass people into being on our shows. I had one experience where I was asked to go to a woman's house 3 times to try and sell her on being on the show. From the first time, I knew she did not want to be on the show. So we kept going over and over. I kept, you know, it feels very weird to be like, I'm a designer. I'm trying to force this person to like, let me design their house. Like,
you must let me come and transform your home.
Yeah, it is a very strange feeling. So we went and we finally convinced her to do it after we went multiple times. The first day we went to go shoot at her house, she lived in a gated community. We could not get in. So she ended up dropping out of the show. And we had to then go back to the drawing board and find another person that didn't want to be on the show to be on the show. And that ended up being a gentleman that locked us out multiple times, that was furious the whole time. And when you're shooting these reveal scenes with these people who are seething with anger, and my job is to be like, you know, like you have to be upbeat and happy. That's a hard job. And, you know, something that I think if any casting directors are out there that want to hire me, I am now an actor because both of those seasons of the show involved so much acting that I never would have expected, because having light and happy energy with somebody who hates you and who does not want you in their house is incredibly challenging.
So this was a whole other element that you couldn't have imagined in the very beginning when you first got the show.
Well,
I mean, the show was supposed to all be about healing, yes. Right? And people, right? You were going to create a new life after their breakup. The whole concept, Unspouse My House, was to get rid of those bad vibes from my previous, right? And it was all going to be you were healing yourself.
Yes.
You were bringing healing.
Yeah, and, right? And just to clarify, that was not the majority of people were not cajoled into being on my show. Most of them wanted to be there, and I have good relationships.
Right.
A number of them texted me yesterday, like, I love you, like, let's meet up. And these are people who gave something to me that I, you know, I will always have, and I will always, always, always be thankful for it. They shared their story. They allowed me to do my weird little like high school drama project. And, you know, I think that they helped a lot of people by sharing what they were going through, because when we are open about hardships that we've experienced, other people see it and they say, I'm less alone because I'm seeing somebody else being brave enough to talk about something challenging. So I don't want to paint the picture that everybody was like forced to be on my show. I would say like 90% of them wanted to be there, but the ones that didn't made it incredibly hard. And it gets back to what the main theme of why I'm talking about all this. It all goes back to money. The reason that was like that is that they didn't pitch in any more money for the casting. And if they had, they could have taken a host out of a very uncomfortable situation with somebody who hated them and made a show that was more genuine. So a lot of the issues that I have to do with income inequality, have to do with a brand, a company that rather than invest a decent amount in developing and marketing shows, is basically their strategy is to throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And what that ends up doing is creating a lot of garbage. And the garbage is human beings like me. And I've gotten a lot of messages from people that say, I feel thrown away. I feel discarded. And the reason is that they're not ponying up the budget to do this. So not only are people not being paid well, the budgets aren't good enough to create a work environment that is humane and sustainable.
So, and when you say people are reaching out to you and saying that they've experienced the same thing, are you talking about people who have also participated in HGTV shows, who have been hosts like you,
yeah,
or been involved with shows?
Yes, former and current, big and small.
So you in no way feel that your experience is exceptional, that
I think my experience might be a little exceptional for when it happened, but having worked on multiple HGTV shows, I understand that at least the lack of safety in terms of working conditions and expectation for hours, the untenably small budgets, and the kind of awkward interpersonal situations that can come from trying to cram a show that should take a longer period of time into a shorter period of time, those are all pretty universal experiences from my perspective, from the people that I know.
Right.
And I've been in this world a long time since I was on Emily's show. So I know not only a lot of the people, you know, in the sort of interior design social media world, I also know a lot of the people that are in the hosting world.
And so you've heard a lot of similar experiences from all of these people.
I've heard a lot of similar experiences. You know, some people are as general as, oh my God, I could have written that myself, in regards to like my post describing my experience. You know, some people are a little bit more specific, like, I didn't sleep for 3 days before reveal. I worked 100-hour weeks. I think what's brought so much of this to light for us is just watching IATSE, you know, the union that has been kind of advocating for more rights for people below the line, and saying, oh, like those are all union sets. Like we don't even have that set of rights because we were a non-union set. So, you know, we're in a time of reckoning where I feel like we're dealing with people questioning a lot of abuses of power. And I definitely think there are abuses of power going on at that network. I want to make clear that, you know, my executive producers from HGTV, they are absolutely not to blame. I have a talent wrangler who was pretty upset that I didn't reach out to him. He was like, why didn't you just tell us? I actually didn't say that to me. He said it to my agent. But, you know, when you're in a position like me where you're just trying to, you know, you have that carrot dangled in front of you, you're going to get all this sponsorship. You're going to have more professional opportunity. You're going to have all this marketing. You don't want to ruffle any feathers. It's always been my goal to be like the good boy. I want to be the person who is easy to work with, that's friendly. Like if you talk to anybody that's worked with me, they will say he was friendly to work with. He wasn't a diva. He wasn't like entitled or crazy. And I think that why I'm having such a strong response now is when you come out of the situation that feels, you know, like you didn't really get much out of it. And then you realize so many other people are going through the same thing. Like, there's an issue, you know, and my goal is to kind of encourage HGTV to unionize their sets. I think that there needs to be better working conditions for everyone from top to bottom. And oddly, I think sometimes the hosts are the ones that are kind of at the bottom of the rung.
We're taking a quick break to let designers know about Juniper Market's launch at upcoming markets this month. If you're attending Atlanta Market or Las Vegas Market, you can sign up while at the shows in the Juniper Market Experience Centers, where designers can walk away with a complimentary lunch, gifts, and a chance to win a $5,000 shopping credit. With Juniper Market, it's like sourcing at a physical market every day from the comfort of your home office. To create an account and explore the brands, visit junipermarket.com.
To sort of wrap up the HGTV part of this, you use the word sort of demystify earlier. Picking up on that notion, in the clearest way possible, what are the expectations that you think designers like yourself should have when they are thinking about pursuing an opportunity to host an HGTV show like you have? What's the reality that you think they should have top of mind when they're pursuing this?
I mean, here's the thing. I would never want to discourage anybody from doing a show, because I think that there is inherently marketing value to doing it. And, you know, hopefully you do a show that does not get canceled after three episodes. Right. But I think that my main thing that I try to tell people is, you know, television is a nice cherry on top. It's a nice little addition. It's good for marketing and PR, but it is not a job to count on. So just having realistic expectations that it is not like going to be your forever job. And, you know, for most people on HGTV, it's also not necessarily a star-making thing, because of what I was saying before, where, you know, they do, their strategy is to just try a lot of things. Their strategy is to either recreate shows that already exist or to try a lot of things and then, you know, invest very little in them and rip them off air if they're not doing as well as they want them to. You kind of have to be okay with the insecurity of that. In all honesty, what I'm not trying to like advocate against HGTV. I'm not trying to advocate against doing design TV. What I'm trying to advocate for is paying people a living wage while they are doing a TV show, providing them with a safe working environment, right, and providing them with a work environment that is sustainable over time. So that one of the people that I spoke with recently, the host, has told me that she was not signing with them because it just was an unsustainable place to be. So I think that we are in a time where people are just not accepting subpar working conditions. So we can't have corny cheeseball network that's pretending like everything is happy and fine while behind the scenes people are like killing themselves to do these shows.
Right. Right. And that's really the biggest issue. It's all money.
It's, where is this money? Why hasn't it been better distributed so that the budgets for these shows can be better? And why are people not being paid a living wage?
to bring us back to the part about the expectation of other opportunities that will present themselves to you, part of the hope is that sponsorships, as you said, being an influencer, for lack of a better word, I know we're trying to find
a word that is less insidious. Yes, I mean, I just started using influencer because it's like the most concise way to say what I do. I make money by posting about companies. Right. And I am lucky in that I get to choose who I work with. I love the products and services that I recommend. They're only things that I actually want in my house and would actually use. But, you know, there is a layer of complexity to it. Your voice is monitored. You have to get everything approved. I'm trying to move more away from that sort of model into a model where it's more of a pay prescription type thing so that I'm not so reliant on companies and having my voice edited. But that's a process, you know, and I myself, I'm just trying to survive like everybody else. So you got to kind of go where the money is, especially in a pandemic that is lasting a very long time.
still raging from all I see.
Still got it.
Well, so help me understand the economics. And you just started to outline some of the restrictions that can often be sort of placed around you. How great that it sounds like you get to work with products you believe in. And as you said, only things you really want yourself. That's not always the case, I know, for people. But it sounds like that was the other pot of gold that was going to go along with this HGTV show package. Mm-hmm. And there was, in the beginning, it sounds like a lot of potential money that you were going to make, hundreds of thousands of dollars, it sounded like, was at least being held out to you as an incentive, but not all of that came to pass, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, it's a complicated, the two years were very different. 2020 was just that things slowed down very hardcore. In 2021, things started really happening again. And because I've been doing influencer marketing for so long, I was like, oh, everything's done. So I contracted in 1 month in 2021, I contracted $250,000. That means that the companies were contractually obligated to pay these fees by a certain date based on certain deliverables that I had to do. Now, I would say about 50% of those projects got pushed due to sort of supply chain issues, which I think is a big issue going on right now in the sort of influencer market. And the other 50% are just past due invoices. I have a company that I worked with where I turned in content to them that I had filmed, you know, weeks previous at the beginning of August that has not paid me yet. And I have countless stories like that of just companies. And I don't know what's going on economically, if it's just the fact that they feel like they can hold on to their money and play with it by investing or whatever. And, you know, they're putting off paying as long as they can. But from what I'm hearing from other influencers and from my manager, it's a pretty universal situation in the influencer market right now. And I do kind of want to note a little bit that I'm an older millennial. My generation, I remember I applied to like work at a magazine when I graduated from college, and I just couldn't afford to work there because the salary was like $17,000, which even then was like not enough to live in New York. So a lot of people like me who have started to make a living off of brand partnerships do it because the economy that existed for that before, the styling economy, the magazine economy, things that were a little bit more professional and vetted have imploded. While I understand how some people are a little bit like, oh, influencers are annoying and dumb and like all they do is like post pictures of lattes and balloons, the reason that there's so many people doing it is that A, it makes a lot of sense for brands because they're marketing directly to people who are like-minded, and B, creative people like me, there aren't a lot of opportunities for us. While it wasn't something that I ever was like, I want to be an influencer, which is interesting because, you know, because I am older, I didn't really grow up in a generation that viewed that as a job. It's just something that I kind of fell into. And now I'm trying to be a little bit more directive about where I'm going because of my, you know, the last 2 years have been extremely liberating for me in that sense. But I do want people to have a little bit of understanding for why people go into that field, because I see a lot of people dismissing or downplaying influencers without really understanding the work, the labor, and why people are doing it.
So help us understand that better. help us understand the work involved, because often it's a great deal of work, and it looks easy, and it looks as if it was all just something that you put together on your phone quickly and magical, but really it's quite a lot of time and quite a lot of work. And as you say, often you're finding that people aren't even paying right. you, or certainly taking months to do so, right?
Yeah, I mean, so for interior design influencers, and, you know, I think most interior designers will understand this, designing, styling, and setting up a room to create a shot to advertise a product involves intellectual labor. It involves designing the space. It involves logistical labor, getting those pieces on site, getting them into the space, physically moving them. It involves editorial labor, figuring out exactly how to present this. You're basically self-producing commercials for very large companies for a small percentage of what they would have paid for an actual professional company to do it. So a lot more physical, emotional, and intellectual labor goes into one individual post on Instagram than one might expect. And brands now, the new thing, well, not the new thing, but the past like year has been everybody wants reels, everybody wants videos, and video capturing, editing is, it's a task, you know, like you have to learn video editing software. You have to learn how to shoot. You know, you get the gear to shoot yourself from different directions. You get the lighting, you know, like the technology that we have is amazing. And I'm like so thankful for it. But at the same time, it still is, it's a heavy lift. And what's been frustrating about the last few years is that because of all the supply chain issues and because of all the payment delays, I've often been in the place where, you know, I don't hear anything from a brand for months. And then all of a sudden they email me and say, like, this thing is coming tomorrow, you have to shoot it. And one example that I've been sharing is that I removed all the carpet in my house. I couldn't afford to like basically do anything in my house except for myself. So I removed the carpet myself, and I ended up injuring myself and getting an infected knee. And it's gross, but like the knee ended up getting really swollen and exploding. And while this was happening, I was forced to do some posts for a brand that involved moving an incredible amount of furniture in my cabin by myself. While I was very sick and injured. And also I had to appear on camera and video, and, you know, I was the photographer. So, you know, there aren't sick days sometimes. And the frustration has been that then that brand took 6 months to pay me. So I killed myself to get their stuff done, but there's never an urgency from the brand as to making sure that I'm taken care of. And that's been the frustration for me and for a lot of influencers over the past few years, is just feeling like we are constantly worried about everybody else's needs, but when it comes to their part of the agreement, that is unimportant for some reason.
Well, and as you point out in the piece that you wrote, you were making decisions about your own expenditures and your own life based on income that you very reasonably thought was coming to you because people had contracted to pay you these sums, right? And suddenly that money wasn't materializing. I think at one point you said that you had been paid $50,000 or $60,000 when you were anticipating getting more than $250,000.
No, yeah, over $300,000, which a lot of that is still owed to me. So the way that I'd like to describe that to people is, imagine that you sign, you know, you interview and sign for a job, and they say your salary is $350,000, and then you work for 6 months and then don't receive payment. And then when you do receive payment, it's a quarter of the amount that they agreed to pay over time. So that, you know, the when I was referring to a kind of a perfect storm with what happened with me and HGTV influencer marketing and the pandemic, basically, because I had spent almost a year working on a show that I didn't make very much money on, I was already, before COVID, starting to deplete my savings. And because I didn't have much time to do other sponsored content, even though that would have been a time to strike while I was hot before the show was canceled, I entered into the pandemic at a huge deficit. So every time I got a paycheck, I was paying back things, like, and often paying photographers and other people who have worked with me. And those people expect to be paid within a week or two. And when somebody does a job for me, I want to pay them immediately. And if I have the money, I will.
Right.
But what can be very hard is if you get like a big sponsorship and you have to hire a videographer or a photographer and they don't pay you in a timely manner, you know, it creates a sort of domino effect where you know, you're not being paid, so you can't pay your people. And more often than not, I have spent the last like $1,000 in my bank account to pay somebody else while still waiting for the brand to pay me. And I'm thinking like, I'm not a brand. I'm not a huge company. They have a lot of money. Why am I doing this? Why do I have integrity and these big brands are just taking their sweet old time to pay me?
And what's your sense of why that is?
I actually couldn't tell you. That I understand a lot less than the HGTV stuff, to be honest. I think obviously the supply chain stuff makes sense. Like if you can't produce the content, you can't make the money. The thing that's annoying about that is that like if, you know, I get penalized if I don't turn something in on time, but you know, the brand has no, there's nothing that happens to them. So it doesn't really matter. I don't know if it's that marketing budgets are tighter, so they're kind of shifting money around. I don't know. But if you work on the brand side, anybody listening, just assume that whoever you're paying has $0 in their bank account, because for the last few years, basically every brand has just decided to pay me so late. And that has, it obviously has financial ramifications, but it also has physical and emotional ramifications. The stress and the anxiety of the past few years have just been completely destructive for my mental and physical health. And I'm feeling a lot better now because I think like getting all this stuff off my shoulders has made me feel 1,000 times lighter. And, you know, a lot of people have like reached out after I wrote the blog post or after the People magazine piece came out and been like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, I actually am great. Like, I feel like I have held all of this in for 2 years because I was internalizing everything and thinking that everything was my fault. And coming out of it, you're just like, a little angry that like other people allowed you to feel that way or that your collaborators allowed you to feel that way. So I'm definitely grateful to be on the other side.
Well, it sounds as if the whole experience has been very cathartic, mm-hmm. and you shared very directly what the stress had been doing to you. You talked about gaining weight. You talked about becoming overly friendly with alcohol for a period of time.
Yes.
And recognizing that all of that was in direct as a direct result of the HGTV trauma, of the trauma around not getting paid for all of these sponsorships. What was most interesting to me in all of it was your discussion about people sharing what's real mm-hmm. and what's true on social media versus so often, as you pointed out, we only want to share this perfect image of ourselves or that our life is going perfectly, that everything, as you said, is sort of balloons and cappuccinos and all great times. And really, you've had such a huge outpouring of people connecting with you and people thanking you and sharing similar experiences themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like I want to explain why, like, especially Instagram is like that. The reason that people are so artificially, you know, and I'm not saying that I hate it when people post positive things. What I'm saying is that I know for a fact that there are people out there that are in my exact same position that are pretending to be a lot richer, a lot more successful. It's a projection. And the reason that people do it is because they think that it is going to attract brand partnerships. And I think I hit a wall after not being paid for more than half of the last 2 years, meaning I went more than half of the last 2 years without receiving any money. When the money is taken out of it, you go, you know, like, what am I doing? Like, what am I selling? And how is this making other people feel? So, you know, I love seeing good things happen to my friends. I'm not saying I only want to see people complaining on Instagram. What I'm saying is that a lot of our economy is in pain. A lot of people are in pain. And for me, I felt pressured to act a certain perfect way so that I wouldn't alienate potential brand partnerships. And when the money was taken out of the equation, I realized, like, I don't care about this. Like, why do I care so much about these people who are not paying me in a timely manner, thinking that I'm aspirational? There's something that I think is really immoral about presenting a fake version of yourself. I think that people like me who have the privilege that I have a very privileged background and a very privileged education. And, you know, I have the appearance to to look like a white person. Influencers that have the type of, basically white influencers, it's your job to do something good with your following and to do something that helps raise other people up. Influencers of color, trans influencers, them existing and showing how successful and happy and powerful they are, that in and of itself is revolutionary and transformative. But everybody else, white men and white women, it's if you have the privilege of people listening to you, it is your job to do something that helps people feel better about their lives and about themselves. And for me, what that has been is saying, hey, I'm a person that has all of these privileges. This is how hard my last 2 years have been. And if you are going through the same thing, there is absolutely nothing wrong with you. And I'm supporting you.
And has it caused you to rethink what it is you were pursuing? So to the point that you were just making about recognizing why am I pretending to be something that I'm not, mm-hmm. in the hopes of getting another sponsorship deal where they're not going to pay me, or in the hopes of getting an HGTV show that they're going to cancel after a mm-hmm. handful of episodes after all of my hard work? Has it made you reconsider what you want to do with your obvious talents? And to your point, with this privilege that you have, has it made you want to channel your efforts in a different direction?
I mean, absolutely. So because you know, HGTV specifically has not really been a fruitful experience for me. And again, I want to just sort of emphasize that I'm not saying that it won't be for anybody else. I encourage anybody to do what I did and to have that experience. And because the financial equation has been so far removed from the brand partnerships, I am much more interested in being able to share content and information that uplifts other people, that makes them feel better about themselves, and that is not tied to corporate interests. So I'm looking into things like Substack, where I can be more user-funded. I'm looking into things like a podcast, which, yes, is sponsored, but the type of sponsorship is a little bit less brand-controlled. And I have the goal to sell another book, which, because my last book did decently well and I have a really good idea for a book, I don't think that should be too hard for me. And I have a goal to sort of get back to basics and to work with clients and to keep making beautiful spaces. Oddly, the last 2 years have been really hard, but they have been setting me up for a more solid financial future, and that I've been renovating a house that I can put on Airbnb in an area that is consistently booked. And I have been building other things, including the shop, that are forms of monetizing myself that are not tied to somebody else's power or a corporate interest.
The cathartic experience of sort of putting all of this out there in a very raw and vulnerable way has been such a relief for you, first of all, but also such a clarifying experience, and has really sort of opened your eyes to where your true passions perhaps lie, and is allowing you to chart perhaps several new courses for yourself.
Because I've been a creative freelancer for almost my entire adult life, I've had a lot of the ups and the downs. And so this last few years has been educational for me, and just realizing, like, there's a lot of value in what I went through, because if somebody like me, who has a small amount of notoriety and a following, can have experiences like this that help other people that are struggling to feel a little bit less like they're alone in their struggle and in their grief, then that's a really productive time period. So that's what I'm feeling thankful for. And you know, like, it's in the end, it's all good. But my main motive for talking about it is really a lot about money, because I think that there is a lot of financial shame that people have. I think we need to be a lot more transparent about who is being paid what, which is why I've been very explicit about what HGTV paid me and what money I was expecting from brand partnerships that brands have defaulted on. And the main thing that angers me about financial shame is that implicit in it is this idea that people who have less money are less valuable. And that concept angers me to no end. That is, you know, I was raised with poor kids. I was raised with rich kids. Like, I didn't grow up with that kind of social stratification. So, and I have a lot of people in my life from all different backgrounds and levels of income. So I think we need to really assess the way that we, the credence that we give to money and status, especially now, because there's so much obsession about superficial things. And, you know, obviously I understand that as somebody who is in a field where I'm kind of pushing consumerism, that there are elements of classism involved in that. So I'm kind of trying to rail against that as well. You know, I want to be promoting a future where people are a little bit more comfortable talking about financial fear and where people don't have shame about having less.
Well, and I'm grateful to you for coming forward and talking about all of that, because I was so struck, as were so many, by everything that you were sharing, everything that you had gone through. And I think that you have done such a great job of pointing out what the realities can look like behind some of these goals that so many in our field are pursuing. And often the reality, as you pointed out, is so different. Mm-hmm. And I think your point about the real struggles that so many people have gone through, I think during COVID, once everybody started to get so busy, there was this perception, well, that if you weren't busy, or to your point, if you weren't doing well, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. What's the matter with you, right? Because everyone's doing great now. How could you not be doing great? So I appreciate you bringing such a mm-hmm. real story forward, and one that I hope can be a meaningful lesson to so many people out there who, as we've said, perhaps have been pursuing these same dreams. And as you said, not to discourage anyone from going after getting an HGTV show. If that's your dream, if that's your goal, absolutely. But perhaps people will look at it with a little bit more of a more wide-eyed and better informed notion of what it might really look like and feel like once you get in there.
Yeah, I mean, and I do like kind of want to end on a positive note with that, in saying that there is a sort of a physical high that you get from having that kind of show, where it's really exciting to be driving to set, even if you're exhausted, even if you're tired. You're thankful that somebody thought you were like interesting enough to have a TV show. And you're thankful to the people that are on the TV show that are helping you make it. You're thankful to the people who are really working long, long hours to help your dream come into fruition. You know, it's magical. So I don't want to paint like a picture that it was all awful. What I'm trying to highlight is that I think HGTV could do a lot better by their hosts, especially in terms of making sure that their working conditions were sustainable and safe, and that they were being paid a living wage.
Well, and I think that's a great message, and it is certain to reach them. So I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah, hopefully they don't send their PR team and their lawyers after me, because I know I'm making myself pretty vulnerable by talking about all this, but I feel like I'm kind of the only one
Did you ever want to be on another HGTV show?
Oh, no, sure, don't worry about it. Like, I think sometimes you need to burn the bridges that you no longer want to go over. And while I have only goodwill towards the people that I've met at HGTV, I think I've realized that for now, that's not an interest of mine. I think I could make more money on YouTube. I definitely could make more money on YouTube. I mean, more than $17,000. But the other thing is that, like, if I become wildly famous for some other reason, they're going to put me back on their network. So, like, it just is what it is. So, and that's probably the only way that I would get back on anyway. So, So I'm not worried about my future whatsoever. Like I know that I'm capable of doing things, and sometimes it's the low points of your life that kind of show you your capabilities. Yeah, but I know I burnt a bridge and I'm kind of fine with it.
Well, as you say, I mean, how exciting would it be if you end up being so successful that they beg you to come back to the network and do a show, and that will just prove how well you did after all of this. And I'm highly confident and eager, truth be told, for you to do another book. Your first book was so enjoyable, and I encourage people to go out and get it. And I hope that there's more of that to come, because in all of this, we didn't get to talk about how funny you are, how fun you are.
Yeah, I know. This was a very serious conversation for me. For the listeners, my book is called Get It Together, and it's probably a book that a lot of the high-level management at HGTV might need to read in terms of like figuring out their next steps.
Well, there you go. We'll leave it there. But I so appreciate you coming on and talking about all of this with us, and I'm really looking forward to everything that you're going to do next, Orlando. So thank you.
Stay tuned. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been an honor to be here.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest design industry news, visit us online at businessofhome.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, browse job boards, and join our BOH Insider community for access to online workshops, a free print subscription, and much more. If you have a note for the podcast, drop us a line at podcast@businessofhome.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps others to discover the show. This show was produced by Fred Nikolaus. I'm Dennis Scully. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next week.